Okay then. So we're good to go now. It's recording. So I'll just say that I'll just start off and say the date and stuff. Right. Okay. So I'm talking to David Amos, who's in New Brunswick. I think, is that correct, David?
Yes, sir.
And the date today is the 20th of October, and I'm in the UK. And David's got a few things to tell us so that we can get it on the record. So fire away.
G'day, Andrew, and hello, world. Anyway, you and I were talking earlier this week, Andrew.
We were.
And then the strangest thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
On Friday morning.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to you earlier about me torturing Boris Johnson and Scottish fellas and about Brexit and stuff like that. You remember me kind of casually mentioning it in a conversation?
Oh, yeah.
Well, anyway, I've called Boris Johnson's office and many parliamentarians in your neck of the woods, as you no doubt know.
Mm-hmm.
But the strangest thing happened Friday morning. And as you know, I know Julian Assange. I knew him before he was famous, and I was talking to Julian Assange personally inside the Ecuadorian embassy before he dropped all those documents about the DNC in the summer of 2016.
Okay.
His code word inside the Ecuadorian embassy was James. And I did not know that I was talking to him. I thought I was talking to an embassy official because he didn't admit that he was Julian Assange.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was 2016.
Yeah.
You guys had the Brexit vote there back, I think that was 2014?
No, it was actually, it was 2016, I think, the Brexit votes. It's been nearly
years. No. That's right. When I was out in Alberta in 2014, that's when they had the vote for Scotland leaving the UK.
Yeah, the Scottish independence.
I was all for it.
Mm.
And Canadian politicians were even over there. Jean Chrétien, former prime minister, was much involved. And it was 2014, and I was all for Scotland leaving the UK.
Yeah.
Right? And then more recently, Cameron got in trouble over Brexit,
mm-hmm.
had to step down. Theresa May steps up, and now she's got to exit the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
So she called an election, and after that got sorted out, she made Boris Johnson her foreign minister,
mm-hmm.
right? And he's a former mayor of London.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I've talked to his brother, who's an MP, or his brother's assistant. I've never talked to any of these parliamentarians personally.
Mm-hmm.
I did a couple of them years ago, way back in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
But years ago, 2012, 2013,
mm-hmm.
they made Mark Carney, the former governor of the Bank of Canada and a former partner of Goldman Sachs, the governor of your Bank of England.
That's right.
And I knew it before most folks did because even the U.S. Securities Exchange Commission was Googling me to see what went on between Mark Carney and I before he was the governor of the Bank of Canada.
Yeah.
And also, the postmaster for the Royal Post in England is another Canadian. And also, the person in charge of your freedom of information in England.
Yeah.
Is another Canadian. Right? So I've dealt with all those Canadians, right?
Mm.
Over here and then over there.
Mm.
Now, Scotland wanted to leave and they had the vote. It was kind of like when Quebec wanted to leave Canada way back in the 90s over here.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the right to do so according to our constitution. And the vote was very close in Canada.
Mm.
And because of the politicians that were involved in keeping Quebec and Canada, they sided up with the Brits and were trying to keep Scotland in the UK.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's when I was having a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But back in time, before you guys had the Olympics,
mm-hmm.
and about a year or so after I met you,
mm-hmm.
I met you in the fall of 2009, and then I went into the woods for 6 months.
Yep.
And then I come out, if you recall, I got this email from Julian Assange that pissed me off.
Yeah.
And that was before he was famous.
Yeah.
Right? And then he released that collateral damage video, and he was world famous.
Right.
But at the time, as soon as I was on the internet again in 2010,
yeah,
you and I were talking, and I got a Magic Jack in the summer of 2010, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
I was talking to many parliamentarians in your neck of the woods,
mm,
and I actually have emails from them to me.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was a cabinet minister under Cameron.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in charge of the internet, sports, media, and most importantly, the upcoming Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I actually was talking to his assistants, got stuff in writing, and this is a cabinet minister and your governor.
Right.
And I think I probably might have forwarded you some of the emails.
I think you did. Mm.
But that was a long time ago, okay?
Mm.
And then you and I were having a conversation last week, and I mentioned many things. Julian Assange and Boris Johnson were two of the things I know I spouted off about.
Mm.
So anyway, Friday morning, I'm playing politics and I'm having my first cup of coffee,
mm,
right? And on CBC, they had this reporter for The Guardian, a newspaper over your way.
Right.
Call in from Lima, Peru.
Right.
Right? And he's calling CBC, and I don't know if it was live or not, you know, that whether it was pre-recorded,
mm,
but it was, it come on as kind of sort of live, you,
yeah,
know, first thing in the morning, CBC.
Right.
And this reporter for The Guardian is talking about Julian Assange and how he has documents from the ambassador of Ecuador, that was in England, is now out of there. And I think that was the woman I talked to back in 2016.
Yeah.
And they even had recordings of her voice.
Mm.
And that was the lady I think I talked to when I called back and asked to speak to James. And I said that James is the ambassador's assistant. And she went, no, he's not. And I said, what do you mean? He said his name was James. He said he was ambassador's assistant. She goes, no, he's not. And I said, well, who the hell's James? And she said, that's our code word for Julian Assange. And I died laughing. You remember that story, right?
I do, yeah.
Well, apparently that woman, I think it might be the same woman, they've had an election in Ecuador since then.
Yeah.
And nobody's heard of Julian Assange for a year now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they've tried various tricks to try to get him out of the embassy, like make him a citizen, try to move him to Russia. But nobody's actually seen him,
mm-hmm,
for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, this woman and this reporter from The Guardian were talking about what a pig Julian Assange is in his abode in the embassy's basement. Now, they're ordering him to clean his bathroom and take care of his cat and all kinds of, like, dumb things,
huh,
right? That's what they were talking about,
yeah,
on CBC. And then they turned the CBC show into entertainment factor about what to do with a house guest that won't leave, kind of thing, and won't take, you know, is overbearing.
Mm-hmm.
So they were just using this Julian Assange issue just to talk about house guests.
Yeah.
So anyway, I took an interest because it was Julian Assange.
Yeah.
Right? So, before I can, like, you can get a podcast of the show, but it takes them a few hours to put up the podcast.
Yeah.
But I'd listened to the reporter's name, and his name was like, something like Dan Collins or something.
Yeah.
So, I'm Googling Dan Collins, Julian Assange, Guardian, that kind of crap.
Right.
To see if I can find out what he's talking about, right?
Yeah.
And then he mentioned another reporter, like Gossamer or something like that. You know, he just said it, and I was just relying on my memory, right?
Yeah.
So coincidence would have it, when I finally did locate an article in The Guardian with the name Collins and Gossamer, right? It was about a parliamentarian, a cabinet minister, named Damien Collins.
Right.
Not the same guy.
Right.
But that's how I had it in Google.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Damien Collins, if you read the article, if you're looking at the blog I told you to have a look at, there's the article there, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I've got a picture of a cat on the blog.
Yeah, that's BBC.
Yeah, that's, yeah, the, yeah, anyway, right, exactly. So on your blog, there's
if you scroll down, you'll see.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, Damien Collins, if you read the article in The Guardian.
Okay.
Is on this committee, worried about, Russians and everybody interfering with American elections, British elections, and there was a company that, was involved with interfering with elections, and he's grilling them. Stuff like that. And his job is he has the same cabinet portfolio as that person that answered me years ago. Sports, media, internet, right?
Okay.
And it was just coincidence that his name was a similar name to the reporter.
Okay.
This Damien Collins, right?
Okay.
So, if you look at the blog, you can see where I sent him and Boris Johnson and various reporters that had created these articles all the same email.
Okay.
Right? And then I pick up the phone after I send the email and I talk to Damien's assistant inside the parliament in your country.
Okay.
And I said, I just sent you an email. I want to make sure you got it. And he's looking. Now, this guy isn't, his boss is in charge of the internet in your country.
Right.
Right? And he's worried about internet and political interference and everything. This is his portfolio. Right? And the guy's looking hard and he goes, no, I didn't get the email. I didn't get the email. And I could tell he was looking hard for it. He was being honest with me. Right? And while I'm talking to him, I check my email account, and lo and behold, the two British parliamentarians that I sent the email to, both their accounts were blocked.
Oh.
However, I had sent Boris Johnson an email just the day before or so, just a day or two before, I can't remember exactly, but just that week, and it wasn't blocked, and I was in an argument with a journalist over here who also emailed Boris Johnson. Mm-hmm. And you understand this email is going to the FBI, the RCMP, and other journalists. And you can see the emails in my blog, right? Mm-hmm. So while I'm talking to this guy, and he's looking hard for the email, I refresh my email to see if anybody's computer had responded to it. Because some people deny it, but their computers are more honest than they are because their computers sometimes will acknowledge the email. So I put enough in the subject line to politically embarrass them if their computer happens to bounce back the email, right? So I refreshed to see if anybody had responded to the email yet, and lo and behold, their emails were blocked. So I tell the guy this, and meanwhile, he's denying this assistant to Damien Collins is denying that Boris Johnson used to be his boss. And I'm saying, buddy, do you have any idea who you're talking to? And he goes, David Amos. I said, I strongly suggest you Google me, right?
Okay.
Because Boris Johnson was the foreign minister. And if you bother to read your own boss's profile, Boris Johnson was his boss until he quit a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
And he's going, no, he wasn't. I'm going, yes, he was. And if you could read the profile of your boss in the email that the British Parliament blocked, you will see your boss bragging of Boris Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And this this guy's going, well, I got to go to a meeting. I said, well, rest assured, I'm calling Boris Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
So I did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the phone to Boris Johnson's assistant.
Yeah.
Right? Now, he's raising a lot of hell with Elizabeth May, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows what to do with Brexit.
Theresa May, you mean? Theresa May, yeah?
Yeah. Did I say Elizabeth May?
Yeah.
Yeah, Elizabeth May is the leader of the Green Party over here.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, he is giving your prime minister a headache on a daily basis, right? Mm-hmm. And people are speculating he could be your next leader of the Conservative Party. I've heard mm-hmm. that speculation. And who knows, right? But as far as I know, your government is in a minority situation,
mm-hmm.
are having trouble closing a deal with the EU, and things are much array in your neck of the woods,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, here's what Boris Johnson knows and everybody else knows. Do you remember the governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney?
Right.
Right? Well, long before he was ever governor of your Bank of England,
mm-hmm.
And actually when he was appointed governor of the Bank of Canada, and he mm-hmm. moved from Goldman Sachs.
Right.
Goldman Sachs is one of the companies that made a lot of money when the economy crashed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he went from a partner of Goldman Sachs to the governor of the Bank of Canada. And everybody says Canada did far better in the economic collapse than the Americans did, which is not true.
Mm-hmm.
We bailed out our banks for exactly the same proportional amount of money as the Americans did with their TARP. We just did it in a different way.
Yeah.
You understand? But your country almost went bankrupt. I don't know if you're aware of this, but the Royal Bank of Scotland,
mm-hmm.
right, almost went under, so the British taxpayer, namely you,
oh, yeah.
had to buy all the common shares in the Royal Bank of Scotland. Did you know that?
Pretty much, yeah. I knew most of that.
Yeah. So actually, not only did you bail out your bank, you bought your bank.
Mm.
Except for the preferred shares.
Mm.
Now, the reason they had to do that is the Royal Bank of Scotland lost a lot of money when the economy collapsed like Iceland did, and where they had their investments.
Mm-hmm.
One of the places where they had their investments was with Bernie Madoff.
Yeah.
And another one with, they owned a bank that was involved in stealing my wife's property.
Yes. Yes.
They owned the whole bank. Remember me telling you about that?
Oh, yeah. Because that's how this all started for you, isn't it? Or one of the main things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, in 2010, as I was arguing with this bank before it went public, because it was owned by the Royal Bank of Scotland, and the Royal Bank of Scotland was going public with it down in the States,
mm-hmm.
I'm bitching about the Royal Bank of Scotland, this bank, and everybody, to many lawyers in the States, and a woman who worked for your financial oversight, they used to call it the FCA, and now they call it the FSA.
Right.
Right? She got reading what I was saying about the Royal Bank of Scotland. This would be, I think around 2012, okay?
Yeah.
And she made her own complaint with my information.
Interesting, yeah.
And then your FSA or FCA, whatever it is,
mm.
is now overseen by this dude called Alex Bailey.
Right.
Anyway, she come up with a complaint number, and you guys, or your financial oversight, which is kind of like the American SEC,
mm.
wanted more information. However, in Canada, we have no federal oversight of the security exchange business. It's all done at a provincial level.
Mm.
And I already have answers from them. And never forget, I'm suing the Queen about all this.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So anyway, your FSA or FCA. We'll say FCA. I know they changed the name there a couple of years ago from FSA to one or the other.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, were asking me for information, and then they went quiet. And then I would call and try to talk to these women. And this is over 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
All of these people that would answer me that had names and IDs,
mm-hmm.
all got canned, no longer exist.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then a couple of years ago, that's when they turned to the FSA. Round and round we went, just as David Cameron was losing his job as prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
And a whole new round of complaint numbers and new people. And wanting to know more information. And I'm talking on the phone to them. I'm getting calls from Alex Bailey's assistant. He's the boss.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then I got emails from Alex Bailey and his assistants telling me to go to hell. And I published those on the internet. And I said, what part of this don't you understand? If the British taxpayer reads what I sent you and what you sent me, they'll hang you. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You're paying for all this nonsense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my documents are irrefutable. They can't be argued.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So all they do is say, quit sending me emails and go to hell. And I go, to hell with you. I'm in federal court suing our queen. What part of that don't you understand? Our queen, mm-hmm. right? And they still don't understand. But they do understand. The whole mission is to keep me under a rock and never say my name. I'm the guy that doesn't exist. Sooner or later, I'll crawl away and die. Mother Nature dictates that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my mission is to put the documents on the internet, have everybody review it, put as much in the public record. That's why I'm in court. That's why I run for public office.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, here's CBC. Pick the day of all days to talk about Julian Assange's cat and his dirty bathroom.
Yeah.
With a reporter from The Guardian. Now, here's where the plot really thickens. There was a reporter for The Guardian named Ed Pinkleton. You can see I sent him the emails.
Mm-hmm.
He called me way back when I was talking about the Royal Bank of Scotland.
Yeah.
And Julian Assange and everything else. He called me. He sent me an email first with his contact information.
Mm-hmm.
He contacted me. He was in New York. The Guardian is the newspaper that worked with Julian Assange out of the gate. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I sent him the motherlode information. The Guardian.
Yeah.
Their lead reporter in New York.
Yeah.
All he had to do was waltz around New York and see what I was saying was true. Or it's only 200 miles from there to Boston. He could have gone to many courts. But I sent him the documents anyway, so he didn't have to leave his desk. And you've seen my documents, Andrew.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So you can't argue them. They can't be argued.
Mm.
So they just try all the legal trickery in the world, like, because they own the judges, and then they put me in jail, and then they said I wasn't in jail, you know, and it just goes on and on, right?
Yeah, oh, they just lie.
But,
yeah, pathological lying.
Oh, for sure. But most people know, you know, you ask anybody on the street, and they probably couldn't tell you their MP is, but the next word out of their mouth would be they're all crooks, right?
Mm-hmm. Many people think that, yeah.
And most people don't care. A lot of people don't bother to vote. And who would blame them, right? Mm. They all feel powerless and helpless, right?
Mm.
Well, take a card from CBC. And rather than talk about the important things that Julian Assange has revealed over the years, right?
Mm.
Or where he's been for the last year and nobody's seen him or his cat, right?
Right.
They want to make fun about his bathroom.
Mm.
Because the audience is CBC, and they know their audience, would find more fun in the comedy of somebody famous being a poor housekeeper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Than anything else. Well, if you can't find fun in this madness, you will go crazy.
That's true. Right?
And the average person, as I said, doesn't care about the affairs of the Royal Bank of Scotland, or nobody could tell you who the Prime Minister of Canada is over in your country, probably.
Mm.
Well, you might be able to because he's a handsome young fella, right?
Mm.
Do you know who the Prime Minister of Canada is?
I don't know who he is now. No, not at this current time.
Exactly. Well, he's a handsome young man. His name is Justin Trudeau, and his daddy was Pierre Elliott Trudeau.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And he's prime minister by way of DNA and nothing more, nothing less. It matters very much who your daddy is when it comes to politics.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But anyway, he takes great selfies, and he got elected by virtue of the opposition lost. Not that he won. They lost, but what cemented the deal was he promised to legalize dope if he was elected.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people who never voted in their life go, he's going to legalize dope? Well, he won by a landslide.
Yeah.
Well, he legalized dope this week.
Yep.
And his political party is in the toilet. And I just ran an election here against the Liberals, and there's a very interesting results of the elections here that's made the news big time. Around the world, not just Canada, a lot of Trump-like entities like Brazil and stuff like that are getting elected. They call them populists or something, but they're hard right-wingers. And their reaction to the left having its way for so long, right? You know, it's like a pendulum. Things swing one way and swing the other, right? Well, the same thing here in Canada. Every provincial election, it's been a populist getting elected. What happened in Quebec was insane.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently, just this month. The Liberals went down in flames. Same thing in Ontario. Same thing here in New Brunswick was even more interesting, the kind of election they had here.
Mm-hmm.
And the Liberals are losing throughout the country. That said, Trump, even though everybody hates him, his base, he's incredibly popular.
Mm.
Trump is a buffoon.
Yes.
But everybody loves their money. And underneath Trump, the stock market has climbed to heights that are unimaginable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The stock market is higher. I can't believe how high it is. Based on speculation only.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Russians and the Chinese, for years, have been buying gold by the ton.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's an old rule, he with the gold makes the rules.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, you're looking at the end days of the petrodollar.
Could be.
Now, what just happened in the last couple of weeks with that journalist being murdered inside the embassy in Turkey.
Okay, yes,
and
great.
Saudi's just the last couple of days. I mentioned it and you didn't know much about it, but it's in the news more now.
Mm-hmm.
But Saudi's just in the last couple of days have admitted he was murdered inside the embassy. And they have 18 of their own people under arrest, and one of them just died in an interesting car accident.
Hmm.
And now they're looking for the guy's body in the woods in Turkey.
Wow.
Now why with this strange prince who arrests all his buddies and puts them up in the Ritz-Carlton and goes for the money, why would he suddenly flip on the rhetoric just because Trump made a speech or two?
Makes you wonder.
No, it's got to do with the petrodollar and the Arabs and money. Mm-hmm. The Russians have oil. Many countries have oil. The biggest exporter of oil in the world right now is the United States.
Right.
Canada has lots of oil.
Yeah.
Why do we need OPEC oil?
Good question.
Who are these crazy Arabs?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Canada's got lots of oil, and we're willing to sell it to the Chinese. Right?
Okay.
OPEC and the petrodollar is in trouble. The Chinese and the Russians won't play their game, nor will the Iranians.
Mm-hmm.
and the games they've been playing in Syria are coming to an end.
Yeah.
The nuts that have been tearing up Syria, their days are numbered. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And who financed them in the first place was the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's go back in your memory banks and why I called you. If you recall, in 2013, I was talking to the ambassador for Brazil in Washington. Do you remember that?
Vaguely, very vaguely.
I sent you his voicemails and stuff.
Mm.
Well, it was 2013, in October, November 2013.
Mm.
And Dilma Rousseff was prime minister, president, or whatever, of Brazil.
Mm.
And she had just told the IMF, you know, the International Monetary Fund people.
Yeah.
This was 2013. To go to hell. And Brazil has lots of oil, lots of their own natural resources, and they're quite powerful, right?
Right.
And Dilma is a character unto herself because years ago she was a revolutionary and suffered greatly fighting governments, and now she come up through the politics the hard way. You know, mm-hmm. she earned her job, right? Mm-hmm. And she was quite a firecracker. And she was challenging bankers and everybody, and Brazil has its own assets. And you remember how Chavez was acting out, too, and challenging the Americans, right?
Yes.
And then also you had Gaddafi. He was going to put water in the desert and bring it to life, and he was going to base currency on gold and everything. They couldn't have that, right?
Right.
So they got rid of him. So anyway, all that said, in 2013, Obama and John Baird of Canada were hustling people at the G20 meeting in Russia.
You're right.
To let them bomb Syria. Do you remember that?
Vaguely. I didn't follow it already, but yeah.
Well, this was 2013 at a G20 meeting in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And the only two people talking any sense was Putin, the... I guess how you say his name is Putin.
Right.
A Russian ambassador corrected me when I said Putin. He goes, no, it's Putin. I said, like the French fry and gravy? And he didn't understand what I was talking about. But
yeah.
It's a French dish over here. Poutine, have you ever heard of it?
I've never heard of that, but yeah, I know what you're saying now.
Yeah, but anyway. I can't say Putin. I call him Putin. Putin was telling the Americans to back off. And Dilma was bitching about money. So I agreed with both of them, so I was calling all the ambassadors for the G20 while they were in Russia, and managed to speak to the ambassador for Brazil in Washington, and he called back, left voicemails and stuff like that. And then somebody kept interfering with our conversations. And then when I did try to call him back, he no longer existed. So then I called you, and we had a long conversation.
Right.
And you put that conversation up on your website.
Okay.
And then I used clips of it, of that conversation later.
Yeah.
That you recorded for me and forwarded that to many people, because the date stamp of when you and I had the conversation and when you put it up on your website.
Yeah.
And the voicemails I had couldn't be argued. Yes, I made a contact on this day, and yes, I contacted my friend Andrew. We talked about it on this day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that was proof of contact and stuff, because I'm going, like, people are disappearing again, and, you know, the cops are buzzing around me, and things are quite dicey, you know. Things can get dicey with me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They locked me up a couple times, taking everything from me, and all I have is my wits, right?
Yeah, yeah.
One of my wits is employing my friends to back me up, kind of thing, and you do on a regular basis, and for that I thank you.
Sure.
So, anyway, in 2013, we had a long and rambling conversation where I was just kind of giving you information overload.
Okay.
You allowed me to do it, and then after you put it up, then I could just download the file and take clips of it from it that I deemed appropriate.
Yep.
So that's what I plan to do today with this conversation.
Okay.
Now, since nobody will listen to me over money or war or my lawsuits or my political endeavors, maybe they'll get a laugh out of the fun I'm having embarrassing the hell out of Boris Johnson.
They may well just get some kicks out of that.
And this Damian Collins character, right?
Right.
And the first thing I have to do is prove what happened and when. So when I was calling you on Friday, this idea was just dawning on me,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So I created a blog that you're looking at with emails, clips from articles, proof of when I sent the emails, and I already stored the blog in Iceland because Google often kills my blogs.
Yeah.
But they can't kill the blogs that I store in IMMI.
Okay.
Right? So before anything bad or anything went poof, I thought, okay, we'll take this stuff, make a blog. I have the date stamp of the blog. I saved the blog, proof that the blog existed, put it in another website in Iceland, you know, a double check, triple threat kind of thing.
Right.
And then I called you, but it was the middle of the day, and I left you a voicemail and said you're probably out, but I'd like to record a conversation.
Sure.
And you're back to me today, and this is the conversation. Now, I'd be talking through my hat to say what I'm up to,
mm-hmm.
because I won't know it till I'm up to it.
Yeah.
I could wake Monday morning with a brand new plan, but right now I'm kind of busy with politics here in New Brunswick because I ran in this election,
mm-hmm.
and there may be another election right away quick. Plus, right when I was calling you,
mm-hmm.
I also got a filing from the Crown in federal court,
mm-hmm.
that I got to argue in federal court. Plus, I'm got to put a matter before the Supreme Court,
mm-hmm.
and file another lawsuit or two. So mm-hmm. I'm busier than 10 men, all right?
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to have fun, but this is just speculation on my part, right? Mm-hmm. When I get a chance, I think I'll contact the people in Scotland first.
Yeah.
Because if my memory serves me correctly, Scotland was all mad when the vote went to separate from the EU. I believe Scotland wanted to stay with the EU.
Okay.
My memory serves me correctly.
I can't remember.
Since they voted to stay with the UK, then they must exit the EU. And the folks in Scotland don't want to. And then you have Boris Johnson, who was a big champion about exiting the EU, right? He was one of the ones that wanted out of the EU.
Okay.
Right? And then that's how he became so powerful when Cameron stepped down and was made foreign minister. But as I watch this Boris Johnson, he seems like an incredible buffoon.
Yes.
He seems like an idiot. His brother seems smarter than he is. But he's the guy that takes the news. He's the guy in the news. He's the guy that everybody talks to and about. You understand?
Yeah.
So, I'm thinking the people in Scotland can't be too happy with him because they wanted to stay with the EU.
Yeah.
You understand? So when I get a chance, I'm going to research it a little closer.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've talked to many people in Scotland. I will figure out who is his most vocal critic in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
And then pick some of them. And maybe I can get them to make fun of Boris Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And with any luck at all, maybe they'll stumble upon my work on the internet. Now, this is why it's important to you and everybody else. The internet.
Mm-hmm.
Back when I was running for parliament in 2015,
mm-hmm.
they were making a deal called the TPP,
mm-hmm.
Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Okay.
And even Iceland, Birgitta Johnsdottir in Iceland,
yeah.
were all worried about the TPP deal. Now, why on earth would people in Iceland care about a deal made with countries around the Pacific Rim?
Mm.
Has to do with the internet.
Right.
Control of the internet. You and I should be worried about that. You and I play on the internet all day long.
True.
Right? It has to do with rights and basically choking the internet down.
Okay.
The tool that you and I use on a daily basis is being much restricted. I mean, look at what's happened with even Alex Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the days of the Wild Wild West, and that's what a judge just said here in Fredericton, New Brunswick, about the internet,
yeah,
are over. That's mm-hmm. what she said in a judgment.
Yeah.
Right? And I want it to remain the Wild Wild West.
Of course.
What's wrong with freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of change and exchanging information, just like you and I are doing now.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
But if they can throttle us down, and Alex Jones is a perfect example, or Tim.com, remember him?
Ooh, I don't remember him.
Or Julian Assange?
Yeah, yeah.
Tim.com, he's this guy that made a lot of money gaming. He's from Germany. He's this big fat fella.
Right.
And, He made some more money than God. He went and settled in New Zealand.
Mm.
And the British, or the New Zealand, John Keyes was the prime minister. He quit as prime minister. I even got answers from John Keyes. When you and I first met, I was dealing with New Zealand then, remember?
Okay, I don't really remember, but yeah.
Yeah, when you and I crossed paths with those emails were going to New Zealand.
Okay.
New Zealand's part of the British Commonwealth, right?
Yeah, okay,
and
yeah.
I was dealing with New Zealand, Australia, etc., right? They're part
okay.
of the Five Eyes.
Okay.
The Five Eyes. There's England, Canada, United States, New Zealand, Australia. They're part of the Five Eyes. They're the people that spy on the world by way of the internet.
I see.
Five Eyes, they call them. Google the Five Eyes. You'll see what
okay.
I'm talking about.
Okay.
Because back in World War II, when your country almost fell to Germany,
mm-hmm.
they based all the spies right here in Canada.
Yeah.
For instance, 007, that character that Sean Connery portrayed,
yes,
is based on a real live character out of Canada.
Right.
Seriously.
Yeah, I've heard bits of that. I didn't know it was Canadian, but I knew that Fleming had based him on somebody.
Yeah. A guy out of Canada. But anyway,
right.
because that's because your country could have fallen any time. For instance, Holland had been taken by the Germans, and the Queen of Holland now was actually born in Canada. Canada had to give a piece of ground to Holland so that she could be born on Dutch soil.
Yes.
Right? And now look how rich Holland is now. This is where they base all the Bilderbergers and stuff out of
True.
Holland, Royal Dutch Shell and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And same thing with the Queen of England. Canada is a Commonwealth country, and England, very dicey. I mean, you know, could have fallen any time there in 1940. You know, remember Dunkirk, right? And then,
yeah.
you know, all the boats taking the boys off the shore. But everybody forgets about Dieppe. Remember all the Canadians lost there?
I've heard of Dieppe, but I'm not much of a World War II historian, so you know, I don't really, you know, can't really.
For instance, one of the fellows I was named after, Raymond, my middle name,
mm-hmm.
he was my mother's favorite brother. He was killed in Normandy the day after the landings.
Okay.
No, he was killed on June the 8th because Montgomery
mm-hmm.
had held the Canadians back. Because the Canadians, you know, they use the colonials for cannon mm-hmm. fodder. So the Canadians were first off the landing crafts, you know, in Juneau Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And the Canadians took the ground pretty quickly,
mm-hmm.
right? And their mission was to go for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So where they were heading for was Caen, which is not too far from the beaches. I've been there. I've visited the ground. I've visited my uncle's grave. It's on a hill overlooking the beaches in Caen, mm-hmm. right? And anyway, the Caen was a hub, like for all the railroads. You know, all the mm-hmm. railroads kind of went through that. So if they could have taken that town, they could have shortened up the war by months, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Monty, in order to protect his British troops,
mm-hmm.
held the Canadians from going into Caen until they, so they could guard his British troops while they landed and had tea on the beaches, mm-hmm. right? And then he sent the Canadians into Caen 2 days later. Well, by that time, the Germans had to use the railroads and brought panzer divisions in there. Mm-hmm. And just kicked the Canadians' asses for 2 months. And my Uncle Raymond was killed the first day. And
wow.
if you walk through the graveyard, the tombstones tell the tale.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all Canadian boys from right here in the Maritimes.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And that was because Monty, in his delay, had allowed the panzers to reinforce Caen. And then it was a hell of a battle for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then I've got other friends of mine that are long dead that were there that weren't killed. And when they finally took the ground, they chased the Germans up through France.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't take any prisoners. They were pretty bitter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were fighting the Waffen SS, right?
Mm-hmm.
Germans would put up their hands. They just mowed them down. They didn't care. I even had dinner with my wife in a hotel restaurant where a friend of mine had got drunk in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, they broke into this hotel after they took the ground, and there was a wine cellar downstairs.
Oh gosh!
And they got drunk on the booze in the cellar.
Mm-hmm.
And when they come up the next day, when they sobered up, the hotel was all blown to hell, and they didn't even know about it because they were so drunk in the basement.
Wow!
My wife and I had dinner in that hotel.
Huh.
Anyway. And then my first name, David,
mm-hmm.
He was my father's captain in World War II. He won the Victoria Cross. He was the only PBY in World War II to sink a U-boat.
Wow.
From Iceland, between Iceland and between Iceland and Scotland.
Right.
And he was my father's friend, and he was killed on my mother's birthday, May 24th, 1944. And because I was the next son born, I got David's name and Raymond's name, my father's friend and my mother's brother.
Huh.
And what did those young men fight and die for?
Mm, I know.
Democracy and justice? Well, if they got enough sand to answer the call to arms and die defending my rights, I got enough sand to sue lawyers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it is that simple. Like, are we free or are we not?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the freedom of speech and the exchange of information, just me. I would have never met you, Andrew, if it wasn't for this silly thing called the Internet.
Mm.
How would I know you're on the planet?
Indeed.
Right?
Indeed.
Yeah, and now they're throttling that down, and this is a worldwide issue.
Yes.
You understand?
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, they signed the TPP deal, and now this Damian Collins,
yeah,
who's in charge of the Internet in your country,
mm-hmm.
all he's worried about, if you read the articles, is how the Russians can interfere with elections.
Yeah, yeah.
All they care about is themselves.
Well, that's the cover story, isn't it? You know.
That is the story.
I think it's partly a cover story as well, because the backstory is they're going to implement measures which they say are helping elections not to be hacked, but they also have effects on restricting our freedoms at the same time. I think it's both.
Oh, that's the mission. That is
yeah.
the mission.
Yeah, yeah.
To choke down the Internet. So
yeah.
we'll go back into the Dark Ages.
So they do it in multiple ways. You know, they do it from a political angle, and then they say, "Oh, there's too much hate speech. We've got to censor hate speech on the web. So we need these censorship measures." And then, of course, when they do that, those censorship measures will block other things which are not hate speech.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing with 9/11. Everybody saw where the reporter of BBC announced Building 7 falling down minutes, probably half an hour before it went down, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there it is standing in the scene behind her. She's announcing it had fallen. That's, you know. But the most important part, and I know you have a great interest in 9/11, to me, the first day, I was watching the television, right? Mm. But I had internet, right?
Mm. Mm.
And as I'm watching the television and watching the towers go down,
mm-hmm.
when I watched the first tower go down, I called my friend Gene Stanley, spelled with a G, G-E-N-E,
mm-hmm.
and his family is like Lord Stanley in England.
Mm-hmm.
One of his forefathers was Governor General Stanley that gave us the Stanley Cup. Another mm-hmm. one of his forefathers, which was Count Pulaski, the hero of Savannah,
mm-hmm.
who defended Savannah from Cornwallis in the Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm.
My forefather, Daniel Keith, fought against my friend Gene's forefather.
Huh.
Mr. Gene flew B-29s over Tokyo.
Yeah.
He got shot up over Tokyo before the Enola Gay flew. He was from the same squadron as Enola Gay.
Right.
What a lot of people don't know is Mr. Gene was one of the first NSA agents the United States of America ever had.
Ah.
And now we're back to the Five Eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because the NSA, the Americans, the NSA, are the only member of the Five Eyes that are not a British Commonwealth country.
Right.
Now, Mr. Gene, when he was doing his stuff for the NSA, he often used to stay at manors in England, including the Stanley Manor. You understand?
Right.
He's told me many stories. Now, he's told me more stories than enough, and all the feds are scared of what I know.
Yeah.
A lot of the feds think I'm a fed, because I know too much.
Yeah.
Right? But it ain't that I know too much. It's just I have some interesting friends that told me stories, and I got a memory like a vice.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
But you can't deny that Gene Stanley didn't exist. Anybody can Google Gene Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
If you look close enough, you'll see he had a son with the same name that was a lieutenant colonel in U.S. Special Forces.
You're right.
Yeah. But Mr. Gene's long dead. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And they're scared as hell of what I've recorded of what Gene has told me or not.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so what? Who cares? Everybody's dead.
Yeah.
That's history. It's just interesting history.
True.
I'm not dead. And it's what happens tomorrow that matters.
That's true.
And the most honest, obvious thing of all is, Andrew, you have listened to the recordings of the mob that I have, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think you have links to them on your website, and I'm not sure.
I might have one or two, yeah.
Well, how does anybody explain me having wiretap tapes of the mob that nobody will investigate?
Yeah.
And I don't care about dead mobsters, but a lot of the people recorded on the tape aren't dead yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And their Fourth Amendment rights are being violated as you listen to the tapes.
Mm.
But what do you care? You're a British person, so you don't care about Fourth Amendment rights of a Yankee mobster.
Not
and
really.
Neither do I. Right?
Right.
But the interesting part is Whitey Bulger, who some of these tapes are about, buried some of his victims right here in Nova Scotia. And I have decisions from judges. A decision, my most recent decision is about to go to the Supreme Court of Canada. The judge says in the decision, he freely admits that I put a copy of an FBI wiretap tape in the record of his court,
mm-hmm.
but he doesn't have jurisdiction over it because it's American wiretap tape.
Mm-hmm.
And I explained to him in the legal argument, about Wakely versus BC that had been for the Supreme Court and why he had jurisdiction. And furthermore, some of these dead mobsters are buried in Canadian soil.
Mm-hmm.
And he put in his judgment the other day, or no, last year,
mm-hmm.
that they didn't have jurisdiction over wiretap tapes. And I'm going, are they really that stupid? Yes, they are that stupid. And then, that said, here this week, just like Friday, I got a backup document to another document where the Crown, a couple of weeks ago, not once, but four times
mm-hmm.
in one filing, talked about my possession of wiretap tapes. Four times.
Wow.
The lawyer for the court, they put the evidence in there. I go, are they really that stupid? Yes, they're that stupid. Because they know, no matter what they do,
mm-hmm.
the courts will cover for them. The journalists will never admit what I'm doing, right? So, back to finding a little fun in this madness to protect the internet mm-hmm. for all of us. What people might share, now this thought is just coming to me as you and I are talking.
Mm-hmm.
Since this Collins guy is worried about the internet, and what's available on the internet, and what can be shared, and people's privacy, et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm.
He already got an email from me where I provide links to wiretap tapes of the mob. He already got it.
Yeah.
Except it was blocked. However, he had a regular email account outside of Parliament,
mm-hmm.
and that one wasn't blocked. You can see, if you look at the email, you can see where I sent it to his parliamentarian,
yeah.
and his website address.
Yeah.
One was blocked, one was not. Now, he's the guy that oversees the internet in your country.
Yeah.
You check his profile, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Right.
So if I call his political opposition and go, what do you think of the wiretap tapes of the mob that your buddy's ignoring? Because
mm-hmm.
never forget, the internet's worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Those wiretap tapes are stored in San Francisco, the very place where they hired the lawyers to defend Brigida Johnstadter when the U.S. attorneys in Eastern District of Virginia wanted to see her Twitter account and mine, my Gmail account and hers, because we were friends back then.
Yeah.
I was the guy that introduced Brigida to those lawyers.
Mm.
I argued the Justice Department in Eastern Virginia myself and Brigida's lawyers. None of them would do the right thing. None of them. They're all lawyers.
Yeah.
The most funny thing about lawyers, and a lot of people don't understand this, Andrew, is do you know what BAR stands for?
Not really. No, not in the that sense.
You know, in the United States, you know, you're called to the bar.
I've heard the expression, but I don't know the true meaning of it.
Yeah, in Canada, same thing. And a lot of people think it has to do with the gate that's in the court. They think that's the bar.
Okay.
Right? And the lawyers sit on the other side of the gate, and the audience sits in the peanut gallery, so to speak.
Right.
So people think that's the bar. But no, you don't have any idea. A lot of people don't have any idea how powerful England is. Most common law, right, is come out of England.
Yes.
Right? And common law just kind of has to do with common sense. You go, that's not right. There must be a law against it. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Right? But the most of the law that's argued from the tax man on down
mm-hmm.
is contract law. Contract law.
Okay.
And that has to do with laws having to do with contracts when Britain had a commonwealth around the world. The sun never set on the British Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is contract. Like, you'd have people that would invest their money in the sailboat so it could go off to China and come back with stuff that they could trade and stuff. And Yeah. People were pooling their money because no one person could own a ship and stuff, right?
Okay.
And then they'd have contracts, and then the ship might never come back, and it would be insured, say, by Lloyd's of London and all that crap, right?
Right.
So everything was contract, right?
Mm.
In fact, my forefather, Adam Amos, I believe, got in trouble with the Prime Minister of England, Pitt, William Pitt.
Oh, really?
Because he dreamed up taxation.
Right.
And my forefather, I believe, was against taxation.
Interesting.
And he got in a lot of trouble. Apparently, my forefather was a rich man. Mm. And apparently, he got kicked out of his clan. And when you get kicked out of the clan, you can't keep the clan name.
Mm.
So he picked the name from the Bible, the Old Testament, Amos.
Ah.
Because Amos stands for truth. And his first name, he picked as Adam, the first man in the Bible. So my forefather, on the Amos side, I can trace to Dumfrieshire, Scotland. And the only record I can find of him is in 1798.
Mm-hmm.
That's the earliest record. And the Scottish fellow looking it up goes, your forefather must have been rich. And I go, why do you say that? And he said, look, he gave £5 to this political party. He gave more money than the vicar.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because there's mainly church records, births and deaths, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I go, well, if my forefather was so rich, how come within 10 years he's settling in the backwoods in New Brunswick?
Mm-hmm.
And the Scottish fellow goes, oh, he was on the wrong side of the politics. And I said, that's my grampy. Now, if you look at the Keith clan, which you can look at the Book of Keith, you can find me in the Book of Keith. But if you look at the face of the book, it's written by an Amos, and I'm more proud of being an Amos than a Keith, right?
Right.
But my father was more proud of being a Keith, so much so, my next brother, who's only 15 months younger than me, who died on October 23rd, and that day's coming up, it's the big hoedown and this thing here.
Mm-hmm.
My younger brother was a banker. He was the youngest bank manager the Bank of Nova Scotia ever had, and he had to grow a beard to try to look older.
Huh?
But, yeah, his name was Brian Keith Amos, because my father was so proud of being a Keith.
Mm-hmm.
And what a lot of people don't know is both the Bank of Nova Scotia and the Bank of Montreal in the 1700s, this is before Canada was a country in the 1700s, both the Bank of Montreal, which is in Upper Canada, and the Bank of Nova Scotia, which is in Nova Scotia, were founded by British sanctioned pirates.
Huh.
Do you know what a privateer is?
Yeah.
You get a letter of marque from the king, and then you're allowed to raid shipping and split. You can keep whatever gold and boats that you seize. You're a legalized pirate.
Yeah.
And they made so much money that they started their own bank. So the banks were actually founded by pirates, honest to God. Yeah, but anyway, I got off track there. Bar.
Mm.
Do you ever wonder, in a country like the United States of America, when they come out with the Constitution and said all people are equal and they don't recognize statuses of lords and stuff like that, right? All men are equal, right? Why do lawyers in the United States of America call themselves esquires, which is a son of a lord?
Oh, I didn't know that. Right? Yeah.
You see all the time lawyers. I'm Joe Schmo Esquire. Must have noticed that, eh? And you must have noticed that, haven't you?
No, I haven't. I don't look at those sorts of things very often. I haven't noticed that.
Well, if you look at any lawyer, oftentimes they'll say Joe Schmo ESQ dot, which means Esquire.
Okay.
So lawyers call themselves the sons of lords. Esquires.
Okay.
In a country that doesn't recognize such a position, all men are equal. Right?
Okay.
Well, why that is because they're members of the bar.
Right.
They do not belong to the United States. Bar stands for British Accredited Registry.
Huh.
And that has to do with the British Commonwealth and contract law around the world.
Oh.
So if you wanted to practice at contract law, right?
Yeah.
And America and Britain ruled the world back in the 16, 1700s, you understand?
Okay.
You had to be accredited as being able to argue contract law by the Brits.
Right.
That's what BAR stands for, British Accredited Registry.
Right.
So the American lawyers call themselves esquires because they're okayed by the British. Now,
right.
When you go to a court in the United States or Canada, right?
Yeah.
You've got to look at how the court is set up, and it's just like a ship.
Yeah, I know that.
You know how?
Yeah, I know about that.
You know how you?
Yeah.
Well, that's why. And if you look at the trim on the flag, it's not the flag of our country. It has an admiralty trim around it. You know, the
right.
gold tassels around the flag?
Right.
That's because we're arguing contract law.
Right.
Not common law. And how I twist their nuts is my possession of American wiretap tapes.
Yeah.
Our common law. Murder is a capital crime. There's
yep.
no statute of limitations and got nothing to do with contract law.
Yes.
See how they have a hard time arguing me?
Yeah. I'm familiar with some bits of that. Yeah. The common law thing. And yeah. I didn't know the other stuff though.
Well, they call it the House of Commons.
Yes.
The common man, common law. And they're supposed to be our servants who are doing our bidding. Right.
Yes.
They are at our beck and call because they called us to elect them to, in order to, for them to speak for us in the House of Commons.
Yes.
But as soon as they go to the House of Commons, the first thing they're compelled to do is swear an oath to the Queen and everything is in confidence with the Privy Council.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as soon as you elect them, they swear an oath to the Queen, and they no longer serve us.
That's the trick, isn't it? That's the trick at the critical point.
Therein lies the rub.
Mm.
Now, you see, oftentimes, you'll see, okay, I have a lawsuit against Her Majesty the Queen. I had one since 2015.
Yeah.
If they were to ask a parliamentarian, after they took an oath for the Queen, about any lawsuit, doesn't have to be mine, any form of litigation.
All right.
The next word out of their mouth is they can't talk about it because the matter's before the court.
Okay.
You probably heard them say it in your country.
Yeah.
Right? They can't talk about it because the matter's before the court.
Yeah.
Well, who controls the court? The Queen. Who appoints the judges? The Queen. Who controls the registry office? The Queen.
Yeah.
And as I explained to the judges, it's me and you, me against all of you because you work for the lady I'm suing.
Yeah.
I'm arguing the Queen's lawyers, dealing with the Queen's registry, and the Queen's judges. It's a stacked deck.
Yeah.
But I still sue the lady and nobody can't deny that I'm not.
Yeah.
And then I turn around and I say, nothing can stop me from suing you in the United States, or any other jurisdiction for that matter, because everybody has an interest in my evidence about financial crimes. The economy's the worldwide.
Yeah.
What if somebody, never mind dead mobsters, who cares about dead mobsters? Nobody loves dead mobsters or me, but everybody loves their money.
Mm.
So you could take somebody in Estonia or Portugal or you name it, all of a sudden discovers Dave Amos is on the planet and had evidence about KPMG and the SEC and banks and stuff way back in 2002 and sued about it. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Caused hearings at the Senate Banking Committee in November of 2003, and the hearings have disappeared, but I have my copies. Right?
Yeah.
And they're going, I've been out of a job, been out of a home, since the economy collapsed, and they knew this all along, right? Can you imagine if the ordinary person discovered that during a time of an election?
Oh, yeah.
Well, when I was talking to you earlier today before I called you, if you look at the comment section in the CBC article that I was dealing with until closing time,
okay,
you will see people I walk around and run. I've run six times in this area.
Yeah.
Are just starting to understand what I'm talking about. If you read the comment sections, you will see nobody's calling me a liar. What you don't see is what CBC has blocked. However, as I make the comments, I put them in a blog so you can, anybody can read what CBC is blocking.
Yeah.
Now we're back to the CBC and the BBC and how crooked they are.
Yep.
The CBC, just like the BBC, are just a propaganda machine for the government.
Yep.
Plain and simple.
Mm-hmm.
Right? However, I've gone to great lengths to prove that the BBC and the CBC are just exactly that.
Yep.
If you look at the email that I sent to, Damian Collins, by virtue of his job, he oversees the BBC, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, look where I sent BBC the email.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I'm having fun.
Oh, yeah.
Now, there's great fun in poking holes and stuffed shirts, but you're a man in Nottingham, and I'm a man in Canada, and we're just a couple of nobodies, happen to understand how things work and happen to care, right?
True.
But you travel better than I do. I got red warrants against me. I'm not sure if they're still in effect or not with Interpol.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, you get around and you do speeches now and then.
I do.
Right? Wouldn't cost you much to take that wiretap tape, like 139 and 143,
right,
and burn them both on a CD,
mm-hmm,
and pass them out to your friends, because they'll laugh when they listen to the mobsters talking.
Mm.
And it's sound entertainment. You don't know how many people laugh at those tapes, right? And just pass them out. Get people laughing. And then they go, where do you get this? And you go, well, I got a good friend. His name is David Amos. If you Google just my name, just try it. I don't see how it works in England. Google David Amos, federal court.
Yep.
Now your top hit should be my lawsuit.
Right.
Is it?
I'll try that. One
just
second.
Try it while we're talking, because we're recording the conversation.
Yep. Here goes.
David Amos, federal court, right?
See what, David Amos versus the Crown, T1557-15, top,
yep,
top
now
link.
Click on that.
Yeah, and that's come to your blog and the document.
And that's the entire text of my lawsuit, okay?
Yep.
Now, quickly scroll down to statement 83.
83, okay, let's find that. Past it. Yeah, 83.
Now, how many British soldiers were lost in Iraq?
I don't know the exact number.
Well, one is too many.
Yeah.
Right? Now, Andrew, read statement 83.
Plaintiff states that now that Canada is involved in more war in Iraq. Again, it did not serve Canadian interests and reputation to allow Barry Winters to publish the following words three times over 5 years after he began his bragging. And then you got
this.
January 13, 2015. This is just as relevant now as when I wrote it during the debate. And then he refers back to December the 8th, 2014, why Canada stood tall. It's Friday, October 3rd, 2014. Little David Amos, True History of War, Canadian Airstrikes, and Stupid Justin Trudeau. And then you go into a discussion of Canada's and Canadians' free ride is over. Canada can no longer hide behind America's and NATO's skirts. America spelled with a K. When I was still in Canadian Forces, when Prime Minister Jean Chrétien actually committed the Canadian Army to deploy the second campaign in Iraq, the Coalition of the Willing, this was against or contrary to the wisdom of advice, or advice of those of us Canadian officers that were involved in the initial planning phases of the operation. There was significant concern in our planning cell and the NDHQ about the dearth of concern for operational guidance, direction and forces for operations after the initial occupation of Iraq. At the last minute, Prime Minister, I'm not clear how to pronounce his name, Chrétien,
Chrétien,
and the Liberal government changed its mind. The Canadian government told our American cousins that we would not deploy combat troops for the Iraq campaign, but would deploy a Canadian battle group to Afghanistan, enabling our American cousins to redeploy troops from there to Iraq. The PMO's thinking that it was less costly to deploy Canadian forces to Afghanistan than Iraq, that's what their thinking was. But alas, no one seems to remind the Liberals of Prime Minister Chrétien's then grossly incorrect assumption. Notwithstanding Chrétien's incompetence and stupidity, the Canadian Army was heroic, professional, punched and well above its weight, and the PPCLI battle group is credited with saving Afghanistan during the Panjshir campaign of 2006. What Justin Trudeau and the Liberal don't tell you now is that the Liberal Prime Minister Jean Chrétien committed and deployed the Canadian Army to Canada's longest war without the advice, consent, support or the vote of the Canadian Parliament. What David Amos and the rest of the ignorant, uneducated and babbling, chattering classes are too addled to understand is that the deployment of less than 75 special operations troops and what is known by planners as a six-pack cell of higher aircraft is not the same as deployment of a battle group, nor a war make.
You got to put yourself in. We'll stop right there for now. But in 2014, when he wrote that particular ramble, Canada had sent a six-pack of fighters, CF-18s.
Okay.
This was 2014 when Harper was still prime minister.
Right.
And Justin Trudeau was third party in the House. He was nobody. Right.
Right.
Harper had deployed a six pack and actually a couple hundred men back in Iraq. And Canada has some of the best snipers in the world, if not the best.
Mm.
And they're from right here where I'm sitting.
Right.
Base Gagetown is a NATO base. Right.
Right.
And anyway, in 2014, we were back in Iraq killing people, and our snipers were picking off people. That was all in the news.
Right.
And Justin Trudeau was whining and crying about it, and so was I, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that fella there is that guy I often referred to as Mr. Bacon Fat.
Yep.
His name is Barry Winters.
Yep.
And he started yapping about this before I met you, Andrew.
Yeah,
okay.
I remember some of this.
And I'm going, ain't no way you were ever an officer in our military. Because in and out of service, you must maintain your oath to the Queen. Soldiers and RCMP officers are servants of Her Majesty the Queen. They call them the Royal Canadian Navy, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. They're servants of the Queen.
Yes.
And even though they're out of service, they have their oath to the Queen. And I was accepted into Royal Military College in 1970. I never went, but I was raised by old soldiers and know many old soldiers and know many current soldiers.
Yeah.
And there's no way if you were an officer in our military and if you went down to Tampa, Florida in 2002, like he says he was one of the 24 officers.
Yeah.
And plotted the war in Iraq a year before it happened.
Yeah.
Because they do plot these things. You can you imagine just keeping the boys in bootlaces?
Yeah.
Like you have to have these wars well planned, right?
Yep.
So anyway, Canada definitely was involved in the planning of the war in Iraq. Our one of our generals, who's now deputy minister, Walt Nijinchuk, was one of the officers. In when they first went into Iraq, Walt Nijinchuk was in Kuwait, commanded the attack. And then the next year, 2004, he was actually in Iraq, commanding 35,000 American troops. But anyway, all that said, in 2009, when I'm going, ain't no way you were ever an officer in our military because you just divulged some secrets that could embarrass the prime minister. Right? So anyway, everybody thought I was nuts, right? They killed my blogs, my YouTube channel, you know those days.
Yeah.
But in 2010, I think it was, Julian Assange started dumping diplomatic cables.
Yeah.
That he got from that guy that went to jail, that guy that turned into a girl, Manning.
Oh, yeah, Bradley Manning, yeah.
He started dumping diplomatic cables. And the Guardian and everybody else started going through them.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't long. CBC found the diplomatic cables about just exactly what Mr. Bacon Fat was talking about. The diplomatic cables were talking about Canada being involved in the war in Iraq. So now if you keep reading Statement 83, you'll see where I contacted the CBC reporter, Greg Weston, after he broke the story.
Okay.
And then you can see where the Department of National Defense acknowledged my emails. Right?
Okay.
And then everybody kept ignoring me since 2010, even though Julian Assange's diplomatic cable dumps affirmed it, and CBC, another Crown corporation, wrote about it.
Yeah.
That, when I contacted Mr. Weston, he got fired from CBC for revealing that.
Wow.
A CBC reporter. Now he's a big reporter for Bell Canada.
Ah.
Because he knows too much, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, this was 2009, 2010. Everybody's ignoring me. I'm getting harassed by the cops. I sued the Queen in 2015, right?
Yeah.
That statement was read and argued by the Crown. There's been 14 decisions in my matter that the Crown won't publish. I made them publish the last one, and they've edited it four times since.
Huh.
The last decision. Because it's too politically important. My lawsuit, just about the war in Iraq alone.
Yeah.
That's worldwide.
Yeah.
So anyway, when Iraq started, Iceland was one of the coalition of the willing.
Okay.
Did you know that?
Vaguely. I think you may have mentioned it before, but I think I knew that.
Yeah. But anyway, I kind of buried the hatchet with Iceland when they exposed it during the election in 2005. Iceland exposed that the CIA were refueling their planes in Canada when they took people away for extraordinary rendition.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of the ones they tried to take away, remember?
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, when Julian Assange was over hustling Birgitta Johnstadter to create IMMI,
yeah.
And he sent me that email before he was famous, I'm going, big deal, look what I did with Iceland years ago.
Right.
Anyway, all of these documents are in federal court. So anyway, I'm standing in federal court May 24th. 2017, talking to judges. It's recorded.
Yeah.
I sent that stuff to Damien Collins and everybody, right? You can listen to the recording, and I am talking about Barry Winters to the judges.
Yeah.
And there's RCMP officers sitting in the court listening to me talk about many things to these judges, a panel of judges, right? I'm talking about wiretap tapes, and they come out with their judgment, mention the wiretap tapes. I'm talking about many things, right? Excuse me. So I drew their attention to 83 and Barry Winters. Okay? And I remind them about oaths to the Crown. And even one of the judges, Justice Webb, had wrote a decision, Lewis Brown versus Her Majesty the Queen. And it was his decision, and I even read his own decision to him, where he said, even though you're out of service, you still must maintain your oath to the Crown, right? And it was his decision. I read back to him, right? I pointed to Barry Winters. Now, since this call is recorded, do me the service of Googling Barry Winters with an S, Edmonton, CBC.
Put that on there. So Barry Winters, Edmonton. Barry Winters, CBC. Edmonton, and then CBC.
CBC.
So top link is a CBC story, and it says Professor Hopeful hate crime charge will deter others. That's the one that came
up. Now open it up.
Yep, and it's okay.
Now it should be in and around June of 2017.
Was it July the 12th?
Within a few.
Yeah, July the 12th, 2017 is the date on this story, yeah?
Yeah. Well, anyway, within a few weeks, because that was before the judges on May the 24th, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Within a few weeks, Barry Winters, you can read the article, just read a little bit of it.
Yeah, so the Edmonton Police Hate Crimes Unit charged Barry Winters this spring after receiving complaints about his blog from LGBTQ advocates, including Chris Wells, the faculty director of the University of Alberta's Institute for Sectional Minority Studies and Services. Okay.
All right, now we'll just stop there. That is spin, because
yes.
I've talked to Chris Wells personally on the phone, got emails from him and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
They've known about Barry Winters for years when I was, in fact, in Alberta, when the cops were harassing me in Alberta and trying to arrest me in Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
In 2015, I have emails from Chris Wells to me.
Yeah.
And I killed Barry Winters' blog, but that didn't even slow him down. He just created a WordPress blog.
Yeah.
So then the Edmonton police were contacting me in 2015 and saying they were investigating him. I said, there is no need to investigate. Arrest him. The blog speaks for itself. Talk to your attorney general.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I said, look what he's saying about your attorney general. So anyway, they all ignore until May 24th. And then I'm talking about Barry Winters to the judges, and within weeks, they arrest Barry Winters and say it's because of Chris Wells and stuff. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Now, if you Google Barry Winters, Edmonton, within the month, July, I think it was, he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Google Barry Winters, Edmonton, CBC. And you will see that he was dead within the month.
Barry Spittle Winters' obituary. I don't think that's the same guy.
No. Barry Winters, Edmonton, CBC.
Okay. Maybe I'll go back to that original search I did.
Yeah. You'll see that within
so
the month, there's an article come out.
15th of June. I can't see the death one here on this.
Barry Winters, Edmonton, CBC. There should be a couple articles.
I've got the one we just read out. The next one underneath that is the 15th of June. And it says nobody was safe from it.
Yeah, that's about him.
So we're looking for one in August, presumably, are we, or something like that, August or...
Yeah, okay, Google Barry Winters, Edmonton.
Mm-hmm.
CBC died. D-I-E-D.
Yeah, it's just... They may have scrubbed that, David, because it's coming up with somebody else, I think. 2nd of December is an obituary that comes up. I reckon they must have scrubbed it.
Barry Winters... Edmonton Police, CBC. No, it's there.
Okay. Well, I'm on the UK Google, so I might be getting select, because sometimes the results are a bit different.
Yeah.
So.
Well, anybody can Google it, and if they
I'm sure you can find that story. Yeah.
He died within the month.
Okay.
Only problem is, I don't think he's dead.
Yeah, I think I remember you telling me this. Yeah.
There's no obituary for him.
Yeah.
So that's one way to take him out of the limelight, because they wouldn't want the trial, right?
Right. So if he's he's basically a state asset, and so that he's been given protection at various times.
Yeah, he always was.
Yeah.
He always was.
Yeah.
He's like a shit disturber on the internet, a troll.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Right.
And he attacked me in 2009 as soon as I was talking on that Alex Jones show about the economic collapse.
Mm.
In 2007, 2 years before the economic collapse,
mm-hmm.
he was emailing me, asking me for intel. Right?
Right.
And then 2 years later, he's attacking me, and he didn't think that I keep good records.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he works for the military, and he's just a mindless spin doctor that types a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way he was an officer in our military, but he was privy to information because that was top secret information. And who knew if it was true or not, or could prove it was true or not, until Julian Assange dumped the diplomatic cables many years later.
Yeah.
However, I was aware of something, because back in 2002, in October of 2002, the FBI told me they didn't care about my stuff because they were too busy going to war with Iraq. They told me.
Yeah.
The FBI.
Yeah.
And I thought they were joking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then when they went into Iraq, before they went into Iraq, I had won some judgments in court, and I was contacting Canadian universities right straight across Canada, because before Iraq started, there was people around the world protesting. You must remember those protests before the war started.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm a Canadian, so I'm contacting all the law schools in Canada, and there's not that many.
Mm.
Some provinces don't even have a law school, right? Newfoundland doesn't, right?
Right.
So I'm talking to the deans of the law school while all the students are protesting the oncoming war. And I said, will you listen to me? I said, I'll talk to you. If you'll accept my facts, I'll send you proof of how I can impeach Bush about money. I'm a whistleblower about financial crimes.
Mm.
Because the banks I was blowing the whistle on is where his friends were washing money through.
Yeah.
And George H.W. Bush was born in our town. You understand? And I said, I can impeach Bush over money. I just won 4 judgments.
Mm-hmm.
Please listen to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this was before the war in Iraq started. And I'm faxing all of Canada. The war started. I'm in several courts at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And on April Fool's Day, I'd like the name day named after me, because if there's a fool, it's me. But anyway, on April Fool's Day, I was in court twice that day. The day before, I was in New Hampshire giving the New Hampshire U.S. attorney wiretap tapes of the mob.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny, when you visit a U.S. attorney,
mm-hmm.
You have to go through all kinds of security.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a case of these FBI wiretap tapes. And as I'm going through security, you have to identify yourself and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wearing an old pea jacket from a friend of mine that was in the U.S. Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these U.S. Marshals that guard the courthouses
mm-hmm.
are former military,
mm-hmm.
right? So just a glance at my pea coat and the badge on the pea coat
mm-hmm.
will tell you who my friend was,
mm-hmm.
right? And my friend was an electronics officer for the U.S. Navy.
Hmm.
So was my brother for the Canadian Navy.
Hmm.
So anyway, these guys look at the badge, and you can see by the badge and the way it is that they think I'm an electronics expert for the Navy.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I ain't my pea coat.
Yep.
But I'm wearing it for a reason. You understand?
Oh, yeah.
But then they ask for ID.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm a Canadian, not an American. So I got to show them my Canadian passport and my permanent resident card.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just as soon as these U.S. Marshals see that I'm a Canadian,
mm-hmm.
they start teasing me that Canadians are a bunch of chickens for not going into Iraq, because by then Bush had landed on the aircraft carrier saying mission accomplished.
Right.
Remember he did the shock and awe?
Yeah.
And they're teasing, saying Canadians are a bunch of chickens for not being involved in Iraq. And however, I know people that were in Iraq as snipers.
Mm. Mm.
You understand?
Mm.
And Walt Nitschek commanded the troops, the Yankee troops. All that said, I didn't know any of this until after the fact, okay? The U.S. Marshals, they know who I am because I've been suing U.S. Treasury agents for years, right? And I already have judgments. And now I'm seeing a U.S. attorney in another state. You understand? So anyway, these U.S. Marshals, they're just idiots. They're just security guards. They don't know if their arse is poured or punched kind of thing, right? All they know is I'm a Canadian, and they're all proud because they just whacked Iraq, and you're calling Canadians a chicken shit.
Yeah.
Well, they're calling the wrong Canadian a chicken shit because the last thing I am is chicken of anybody, right? And anyway, all of my documents and stuff, because I brought a case of documents, have to go through this scan thing so they can scan it for weapons or whatever, right? But I've got a case of wiretap tapes, and I open up the box, and I said, don't put these tapes through your scanner. And they go, why? And I said, because the information off the tapes could be wiped by your scanner. You know what I mean? I said, look through the box. They're just wiretap tapes, right? And so, you know, they would go around so it wouldn't go through the scanner. And they're teasing me. So once all my shit gets through to the other side of the scanner, I decide to have some fun back with these tough-talking U.S. Marshals, right? Because now I'm cleared to go in the building, right? I didn't want to mess with them until I was accepted into the building. Because the U.S. attorney was expecting me upstairs. His name was Don Feith. And I got an answer from him in writing. Anyway, after I'm inside the building, I looked at them. And I said, you think Canadians are chicken shits? We're involved in World War One and Two years before you guys were. And we were, right? The Americans didn't go into World War Two until 1917, or World War Two until what? Not, they were bombed in Pearl Harbor, so basically September 41.
Yeah.
Right? And Canada was in from 39, and World War One, the Americans weren't involved till the Lusitania, and then they were in at the end of World War One, the last year, right? Canada was there the whole time. I'm named after a man that won the Victoria Cross, another man that was killed. I know many old soldiers from both wars that went through hell and back, right? I'm their direct descendant. My old man's plane went down in World War II. He was a sole survivor of the 9 men in the plane, or I wouldn't be here. Old man was too mean to die, right? And these Yankees are calling Canadians chickens. Well, they were about to meet the meanest son of a bitch in the valley, me, right? So I put a fistful of these Yankee wiretap tapes, and I ain't scared of the mob either. And I go, look what I got here, fellas, that they allowed through and checked the box, and they're looking at a box full of them, right? Look what I got here, fellas. And on the front of the box is where the supplier sold the tapes to the attorney general, right? The sticker's still on the box, right? I said, look at this, fellas. And they go, yeah, so. I said, you know what's on here? And they go, what? I said, wiretap tapes of the mob involved murder. Guess who's my witness? And they go, who? I go, you, Yankee. And I know right where to find you. Now I'm going up to see her. Right? I've done this with U.S. attorneys. I remember one time down in Columbia, South Carolina. I waited for J. Strom Thurmond to die. And just as soon as he died, I called Columbia, South Carolina, because his son, when Bush was elected, J. Strom Thurmond Jr. lived to be like 99 years old. Remember the Jim Crow laws and stuff? Well, when he was 69 years old, he married Miss South Carolina. She was 19 years old and had a son. And as soon as Bush was elected, he made J. Strom Thurmond Jr. U.S. attorney for South Carolina. And he was barely out of law school. And I said, since I've been invited to sue the United States of America, and my friend Mr. Gene lives just down the road from Columbia, and he's willing to give me some ground in a subdivision, I might as well argue the U.S. attorney in Charleston because it's a nice town, right? So I waited for J. Strom Thurmond to die. This is in 2003, and this is all in my documents that you uploaded on the internet years ago. It's in Cross Border. And you look at it, you can see Marshall Prince and Barbara Johnson in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
It's in that document called Cross Border.
Mm-hmm.
I announced, told her I was coming, and Marshall Prince ducked out, and I met Barbara Johnson, U.S. attorney, South Carolina, nice-looking black lady.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to the building, I got the same problem I have in New Hampshire, right? U.S. Marshals at the gate. And I'm there with my faithful Indian companion. I mean, remember I talk about Woody? He looks like me, just as big as me, and got a long beard, long hair, and his name is Dave as well, so we call him Woody because his last name is Woody.
Right.
And he's half Indian and half German, and I don't know which part of him is more pig-headed, but I call him my FBI agent, fucking big Indian. So anyway. Lots of times Woody's with me and sometimes he's not. On this particular occasion, Woody and I are together.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of times I'll go into like a U.S. District Court and, give Woody my cell phone. And, because you got to turn in your cell phone and everything when you go into the U.S. Courts building.
Yep.
And I'll give Woody my cell phone instead of the, U.S. Marshals because they might go through your cell phone, see what's on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll go, and who's he? I said, none of your business. He ain't in your building.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I said, Woody, don't you tell him anything. Woody be just like a dog. I'd tell him to sit, and he'd be there the next day. You know what I mean? He's just loyal like a dog, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, this particular time in South Carolina, I went around to the Attorney General in South Carolina. I was a lot of places, and I even, like, took pictures of the newspaper stand, so the news date of the newspaper would be still inside the box to prove what day I was there. And then I left a pile of documents at Mr. Jean, you know, the former NSA agent.
Yep.
And then I went to see the U.S. attorney. I covered my butt six ways to Sunday. And then I go into the building. The U.S. marshals are all tough. And then they follow Woody and I. They even get on the same elevator as I. This time, these guys are a lot brassier than the ones in New Hampshire. They get right on the elevator with me and Woody and go up to the U.S. Attorney's office,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then go to the university. And I said, good day. You guys are expecting me. Is Mr. Prince here? No, he's not here, but you know, they're expecting me. I had told them I was coming from Boston. They were expecting me. I called them, emailed them, right, stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I'm here. And I said, this is a courtesy call since I've been invited to sue the United States of America. I figured I'd argue here. And spirit of full disclosure, here's my work against the U.S. attorney in Boston that's up to date. Here's all the files. I had a full case full of documents, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, the next thing I want to argue is murder.
Mm-hmm.
And I had all these wiretap tapes, right? So I grabbed several of them and a CD, and I give them to Barbara Johnson in hand.
Mm-hmm.
In hand.
Mm-hmm.
She took them from me. Then I turn around to the marshals, and I go, I grab a bunch more. I said, you fellas want some? They run away from me. Right?
Mm-hmm.
They could see I was serious. I was more than just an ugly, hairy old man, right? That said, since it was a courtesy call, about a month later, I'm back without Woody.
Mm-hmm.
Waltz into the building like they own the place. Got nothing to check, right?
Mm-hmm.
Without Woody, right? Go upstairs and see Barbara. And I said, since it was a courtesy call, can I have my documents and tapes back? She goes, yes. She goes and gives them to me.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have her fingerprints on the wiretap tapes.
Huh?
I have her fingerprints on the wiretap tapes.
Mm-hmm.
So then I took those documents and the tapes, and have them hid in the American South. You can torture me, and I couldn't tell you where they are.
Mm.
14 men have my durable power of attorney. They are me. Since then, since 2002, two of them have died. Woody's dead now. Another good friend of mine's dead. One I dismissed, right?
Mm.
So now we're down to like a dirty dozen. I have wiretap tapes and my documents scattered all over two countries. And since you always get stabbed in the back by a friend, not an enemy, like one of them stabbed me in the back, I dismissed him, right? Half of my friends that have my durable power of attorney don't know who the other half are.
Right.
So they're a self-policing unit. You understand? And they're all what you call seps of my clan. I'm the chief of my clan. And you can even hear judges in court acknowledge that I'm the chief of the Amos clan and ask me how I wish to be addressed. Isn't that kind of special? Now, people in Scotland should take an interest in the first chief of the first clan of the New World. Now, that's funny. That's funny. And you can even hear judges admit it.
Yeah.
In Canada and the United States. People in Scotland should be laughing their hole out over that one. You understand? But to get people to listen to you like you're patient enough to do, that's a tough nut to crack.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But this conversation, even if I were to die tonight, the conversation lives on, thanks to your patience and listening to it, right?
Right,
now, for your benefit and mine and to protect you, right, what you should do is Google David Raymond Amos wiretap.
Just one second.
Let's do that.
Let's go back to that. And, okay.
So that way anybody can do what you're doing.
David Raymond Amos wiretap.
Yep.
Wiretap, all one word or two words?
One word.
So the top link is on archive.org, police surveillance wiretap tape 139, with your name.
Click on that.
And you uploaded it on the 22nd of September 2008, and then we get the audio.
Click on that.
Yep, it's come up.
All right, now it looks like a tape recorder.
Yep.
And you can download MP3 files of the tape, and all you have to do is convert the MP3 files to a CDA tape and burn it on a CD, and you can listen to it on your stereo.
Right.
Well, for your benefit and mine, click play on the player in the archives.
It's just starting to load up, I think. Hang on, I'll just put my volume
up. Well, it's a wiretap tape, so it's an actual copy of wiretap tape, so it takes about 30 seconds for the tape to begin.
Yeah, I think I've got to adjust my volume, because I was fiddling with the volume on my computer, so let me just check that. Yeah, that's all right.
Now that's a mobster that's a wife of a mobster named Al.
Okay.
And she's just talking to her girlfriend about being mad at her teenage daughter. She doesn't want to kill her daughter. She's just saying that, right?
Yeah.
Now go fast forward into like the middle of the tape.
So I'm at 22:48.
That's the wife still talking. Now see, just pause it there for an instant. The FBI cannot listen to the wife for long because they don't have a court order to investigate her. So they're violating her rights. So anytime you hear somebody who is not Al, the conversation doesn't last very long because they're violating her rights, right? So just pick another part on the tape and you see if we can hit Al's voice. Just click different parts of the tape to hear Al talking.
I wish you could, because I know I don't want it. Maybe he didn't hear it.
Pick a different.
Went to that guy's house. You know that guy that's got this.
That's Al.
And he wasn't there, so I'm going to stay on him. I was with Tommy this afternoon, you know what I mean?
So that's the other guy's voice, the Al voice.
That's Al.
Okay.
Now, Al is a mobster. He's part of the Costa Nostra.
Right.
He's a very serious man.
Sounds like
now,
it.
He's in charge of bookies.
I see.
You know, gambling.
Yep, yep.
They bet on horse racing. He runs a bunch of bookie shops, okay?
Okay.
Now, what Al does is he just makes sure they run. And he handles the money. He goes, collects the money and stuff for the mob.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a tough guy because you need a tough guy. Because if people don't pay, he collects.
Mm.
They get stuck by the people running these bookies. He handles it. He's a very serious poison. Okay?
Yeah.
And if you were to listen to that whole tape.
Yeah.
Because it's a house phone and his wife is talking and he's talking to his mother and he's talking to his sister and he's talking to his daughter and her daughter's drug dealing boyfriend and his daughter's stripping in Florida. He's having a bad day. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bad day in the life of a mobster, but you gotta like Al if you ever watched that TV show called The Sopranos.
Mm, I never watched it, but I know about it.
But as much as Al is a very bad man, a very serious man, he's very good to his family.
Mm.
And he's having quite a day with his family as he go about the business. And if you can listen to him talking, I picked that tape because it has to do with people coming up from Connecticut and Rhode Island and going to New Hampshire, and they're expanding their business, okay?
Mm.
And he's having problems with people not paying, and he's having problems with the Greeks that are coming up from Rhode Island because they don't believe who he is.
Mm.
So he's asking his other buddy, who's further up the food chain, to ask one of the top echelon guys to drop his name so the Greeks will meet him.
Mm.
Well, anyway, you got to put yourself in the time frame of when these tapes were found out behind the FBI building in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And what was happening, if you watch two movies, one is Jack Nicholson called The Departed.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is by Johnny Depp about Whitey Bulger.
Mm-hmm.
Whitey Bulger ran the Irish Catholic mob. Mm-hmm. And my wife's uncle was a good friend of Whitey Bulger. My wife's uncle, the trustee of our trust, was a former FBI agent who helped Whitey Bulger kill a guy in Florida. That's what family rumor has, okay? So anyway, Whitey Bulger's Irish Catholic, they're like the rest of my wife's family.
Mm.
So what he would do is he would sell the FBI information on the Italians.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI would arrest the Italians, right?
Mm.
And then Whitey Bulger would take over their bookie operations.
Right.
And then Whitey Bulger had a fellow named Wheeler killed in Oklahoma, mm-hmm. Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And a Sergeant Huff, who I've talked to years ago, followed the leads all the way to Boston and figured out that the FBI were dirty and were involved in the killing of Wheeler in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And Sergeant Huff said, "You're a bunch of crooks." So the FBI panicked. They gave Whitey Bulger the tip to run off, and he wasn't captured until a former beauty queen out of Iceland ratted him out, and she won a $2 million reward. And anyway, the FBI agents, one of them went to jail, John Connolly.
Mm-hmm.
They threw out all these wiretap tapes in a dumpster rather than destroy them, just get rid of them, when they told Whitey Bulger to run off. And luck would have it, a friend of mine who was a cab driver, who used to dumpster dive to get computer stuff and stuff at the bottom of these ivory towers. This is in the mid-90s when, you know, they had new computers every 15 minutes. And you remember how expensive computers were then?
Oh, yeah.
Well, my friend was trying to teach me how to use computers, and he couldn't get a job to save his soul in Boston because he's a Haitian. He's so black, he's purple. And everybody hates Haitians in Boston, but he had a wife and kids to feed, so he worked as a cab driver. But he was well-educated. From a prominent family in Haiti, and knew all about computers but couldn't get a job.
Mm.
And so anyway, he was dumpster diving. You know how you park your car outside of bars and wait for a fare? You know, all the cabs get in a line?
Yeah.
He used to work at the airport, and then during the nights he'd work downtown and by the bars.
Yeah.
He dumpster dived to see what was in the garbage for computers and monitors and stuff you can imagine, eh?
Yeah.
And one day he come home with cases and cases and cases of these wiretap tapes.
Wow.
And he gave me half of them just because I wanted the tapes just to tape rock and roll music on.
Uh-huh.
And I had them for years. And then years and years later, when they were trying to take me to Cuba as a terrorist over my financial crimes issues. I pulled out the wiretap tapes, and they've all been running from me since.
Wow.
But I don't give a rat's ass about the damn tapes. Now, here's where it gets serious. In the same website, if you Google David Raymond Amos wiretap tape 143, just add 143 to the search.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's the next link, actually, if I go back to the original search. 143.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, if you listen to 143, that's all Al. He's got quite a breathe. Well, anyway, if you listen to that tape slowly,
yeah,
you can figure out who he's going to kill.
Wow.
The guy he's talking to.
Huh.
Pretty fucking wicked, ain't it?
Yeah, it's horrible.
Well, I ain't smart enough to make it up.
Correct.
And I got cases of these tapes.
Yeah.
I've served FBI agents, U.S. attorneys. Many cops in the United States, RCMP officers in Canada, argue them in open court. Got judgments where they're mentioned.
Yeah.
Now, if that ain't interesting, I don't know what isn't.
Yeah, yeah. True enough.
Right? So, let's take people in your neck of the woods. They don't care about politicians, lawyers, and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people love The Sopranos.
Yeah, yeah.
This is real life Sopranos.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you were to burn those, both those tapes will fit on one CD for Joe.
Yeah.
Just pass them out and say, hey, you want to laugh? This is a friend of mine. These are real wiretap tapes. And
yeah.
They go, where'd you get these? And you go, from my friend David Amos. Google them.
Yeah.
Just tell them to Google David Amos Federal Court.
And how many of those have you got on the Internet Archive?
I only put two.
Those two, right, okay.
And I always kept them in confidence because I didn't think anybody had the right to violate the Fourth Amendment rights of the women and stuff on the tapes.
Yeah,
right?
True.
You know, just because Al's a bad man, so be it. What about all the other people on the tapes? You know,
yeah,
they have the right to their privacy.
I understand what you're saying. I wasn't.
Yeah, and I always shared these tapes only with law enforcement, because it's their job, not mine, right?
Yeah.
But in 2008, the RCMP came on private property without a warrant, and took me out of a phone booth as I was talking to the Office of the Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs.
Mm.
As my family was coming to Canada to see me, my wife had to wait till my kids were out of school, you know, bring them to Canada to see me.
Mm-hmm.
And they were getting death threats, right? So I'm calling the Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs to make sure they have a safe trip up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've been using that phone book steady, and the RCMP knew it because I didn't have a cell phone. I just got this one now,
yeah.
Right? And this was long before I had a Magic Jack. This is 2008.
Yeah.
And the economy hadn't crashed yet.
Yeah.
This was July the 4th, 2008. But they'd arrested Spitzer already.
Mm-hmm.
And he testified for me at the Senate Banking Committee, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they shut him up, but they weren't shutting me up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm on the phone calling the world, this is 2008, from a phone booth.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to my YouTube channel where I show the phone booth, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm in the phone booth making calls, and then I'd go back. I was staying in a camper out back of a mill in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And the cops would come in and take pictures and make videos of my car and stuff and tease me in the woods. The cops were harassing me. They would take their helicopters and park it right over top of me in the camper. Everybody in the everybody saw it.
Crazy.
You know what I mean? I'd be visiting friends, and they'd go park at their front door and stare at me. And my friends would be spooked, and I said, don't worry about them. They got no balls.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But anyway, the RCMP used to hire me to investigate things back in the 80s, you know.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning that, I think.
Yeah, they know who I am.
Oh, yeah.
My mother-in-law used to work for the RCMP since 1954. You know what I mean?
It's crazy.
The judge that I met in federal court on December 14th, 2015, knew me very well.
Mm-hmm.
He was an RCMP officer and a lawyer, and he even knew my mother and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Judge Richard Bell. Anyway, he and I had a hell of a hearing. If you ever listened to a hearing at all, listen to the one on December the 14th. Like, I mean, that's all Hollywood movie, that one hearing alone. Anyway, all that said, Judge Bell is telling me things I didn't know.
Mm.
In court. On the record. He was telling me stuff I didn't know. The judge.
Amazing.
And he used to be a lawyer when my mother-in-law worked at the, you know, Judge Bell and I would say, I remember I run into him in court after that, and he come into court with a helmet. Plunked the helmet down. And by that time, I cut off my beard and my hair, mm. and I was fine. Filing something in court about him. And I seen him come in and put the helmet down. And I went, hey. And he come over. He's a personal character. You know, he's from here. He's my age, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't recognize me because I cut off my hair and my beard, right? And I went, hey, come here. And he come over and I said, what kind of bike you got? And he said, oh, just an old Triumph. I said, what? What kind of bike? You know, I thought he was going to say an old Triumph 650 or something.
Mm-hmm.
He said, oh, a Triumph 900 Tiger or whatever. I said, that's not an old bike. That's a new one, right? And he goes, yeah. And I go, look out the window. And my old Yamaha was outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I sold that Yamaha brand new, right,
mm-hmm.
to a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And then I still have it after all these years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the 1979, and it was the first one of that model I'd sold. Its serial number is kind of special. It's 325. It was like built the first day.
Wow.
So it's kind of like I'm kind of big on low numbers.
Mm.
My BMW 900, its serial number was 17. 17. Anyway, all that said, I point out to my old Yamaha, my 1100 Yamaha sitting out in the driveway, and it might be 30 years old, or 1979, how old is that? That's 40 years. It's 40 years old, right?
Mm.
I sold it brand new. And I point at it, and I said, see my old bike? Now that's an old bike. And he goes, I said, you want a runner? Because my Yamaha would eat his Triumph, right? I said, you want a runner? And I'm saying this to Richard Bell, judge. And he's going, no, no. And then I said, you really should look at what I just filed. And he goes, why? I said, because it's about you. You know, I was just filing a brief about him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just coincidence he happened in, because usually he's in Ottawa, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he must have been in Frederick matter. I was just lucky that he happened in on his bike, right? And I said, because it's about you. And then he looks at me. And he realized who I was. He didn't know me.
Mm-hmm.
this is funny. And he goes, oh, he said, I like how you trimmed your beard and stuff. I'm laughing. And he couldn't get out of there fast enough. True story. Like, truth is stranger than fiction.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
David,
dealing with them.
Sorry, we've been running for
with the Maritimes.
Yeah, we've been running for 2 hours now. I'll probably
thanks for your patience.
That's okay. I need to get a drink and a couple of other bits and pieces. So what I can do is
no, that's good enough.
Okay, so I can save this and load it onto my folder and send you a link, and then you can download it. And
Yeah,
I'll
download it, and I'm also, with your permission, I'm going to put a link to it at the top of this blog I created.
Certainly, if you want to do that, that's no problem.
And then I'll probably do what I did in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
I may splice it up and take portions. I said a lot of things, see?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a method to my madness. See, there might be a particular topic, and I might clip.
I'm sort of familiar with how you work, so yeah, I understand that. So
I thank you very much for your patience, kind sir.
That's all right, David. I'd like to try and do my bit to help when I can. And all I'm doing is sitting in a chair, so it's not that difficult for me. So,
what time of the day is it over your way now?
It's just touching 10 p.m.
All right, you enjoy the rest of your evening, and thank you very much, kind sir.
That's all right, David, and we'll speak again soon.
Yes, sir.
Okay, bye for now. Bye-bye.